court side of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast. This is episode 486. I am Andrew, Andrew in our forum, Andrew NLSC on Twitter. Joining me as always, my co-host Derek, DP3 in our forum, and DP3G and DP384 on Twitter. Derek, good to be talking to you as always, and also good to be connected with you to play a variety of games.
We have been connecting a ton on Parsec lately on a variety of games. You know, NBA Live 18, NBA Live 08, NBA Jam on Fire Edition, NBA 2K14, and a game that came out in 1978 in television basketball. And that was an interesting experience, to say the least. But before we get into our recent activity in basketball video games, I actually had a question for you.
Shoot.
We've been hearing the news, obviously, about Damian Lillard looking to leave the Portland Trail Blazers for the Miami Heat. He said he only wants to play for the Miami Heat. Now, I know you're a Bulls fan, but let's say you were an NBA player right now and you could choose your destiny. You could play for any NBA team. Who would it be?
You know, I like the way the Nuggets play, and they are the champions, the defending champions. So I might actually say Denver. And, of course, I do have a bit of affection for Denver because I played two my career games with them. As a member of the Nuggets, winning championships in Denver there. So I might have to pull a little bit and say, I want to go to one of the top two teams, and I'll say Denver.
So you wouldn't want to play for Billy Donovan. You wouldn't want to play with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic. Yeah, you wouldn't have any interest in the Bulls. I mean, that's your team.
I mean, I suppose there's that, you know, you grew up watching the Bulls and getting to play for your favorite team. So there is some affection there, obviously, but I'm not too confident in their direction.
No, that makes perfect sense. For me, the Celtics. I grew up a Celtics fan, and the biggest reasons why I would play for the Celtics is because not only the history that I have following that franchise and all the memories, but also because I'm really close with my two brothers, as you know, and they live in the New England area. One actually lives with me, and I would be able to still, you know, see them constantly because they're not going to be moving away. I wouldn't want to move, you know, across the country or anything like that in order to play for another NBA team. So if I could play in the NBA and play for the Boston Celtics and still be close to my family, that would be absolutely perfect. Who would I like to play with the most on the Boston Celtics? Honestly, it would probably be Lob Williams, Time Lord, Robert Williams. I think the thing with him is, as a point guard, I would constantly be looking for him behind the defense. I'd constantly be looking to drive and throw him lobs. I know that he's not a good mid-range shooter, to put it lightly, but I like the way he runs the floor. I like the way he plays defense and outlets the ball, and I love lob threats. You know me with guys like Stromile Swift, right, and whatnot. So I'd say the guy that I'd like to play with the most also is Robert Williams on the Celtics.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and to have your brothers there for at least 41 games a year, and all the home games, plus playoffs, obviously, would be a fantastic treat. You know, Damian Lillard, obviously, from Oakland, no interest in going to the Warriors. I mean, that's easier said than done, obviously, and then now they just have Chris Paul. So, yeah, can you imagine Lillard on the Warriors?
Yeah, and I heard that Chris Paul is actually jockeying to start, like jockeying to position into position to start and trying to make that happen. And I think that it would probably hurt his ego a little bit to come off the bench for Steph Curry. So I'm sure there's conversations behind the scenes of like, how can we make it work where Chris Paul and Steph Curry are in the backcourt for a championship contending team?
But you know, you talk about dual point guard backcourts, and of course I immediately think of my 2K14 my career with MCW and myself in the backcourt. But as far as real players, I remember the Phoenix Suns of circa 97-98 when they had Kevin Johnson and Jason Kidd starting the backcourt, and a young Steve Nash coming off the bench. That's a hell of a rotation at point guard. And of course the Warriors tried it before with D'Angelo Russell being there alongside Steph Curry. So teams definitely experiment with that dual point guard backcourt.
And how about one of the best dual backcourt video game combos that didn't work in real life, Stephon Marbury and Steve Francis?
Of course, yes.
For the New York Knicks. And then if you remember correctly, Iverson was a point guard for a good portion of his career. And so it was almost like a dual point guard type situation with him and, you know, Eric Snow at times. Or then when he was in Denver, he was handling the ball a lot, but then at different times they had like Anthony Carter, right? And Chucky Atkins, and who are true point guards out there on the floor with Iverson. So Iverson would play like dual point guard, shooting guard, depending on what was going on any given night. So yeah, it's interesting. Like, we'll see what ends up happening with the Damian Lillard situation. Like, I don't agree with Paul Pierce 100% that the Miami Heat with Lillard are like a first round out. Like, I think they could make it further than that. But I do I don't think that Damian Lillard makes that team a championship team. And the piece that some people miss when they're talking about a trade for Lillard is that the Miami Heat are going to have to give something up.
Exactly.
To get him, right?
Yeah.
You don't just keep the whole roster. They're going to have to lose a couple important pieces and some of their future for Lillard.
And of course, that was an underdog run by the Heat. It's not like they're a perennial powerhouse that made the finals because they are a top team in the East. They just snuck into the playoffs thanks to the play-in tournament and made it through. And that's very impressive, of course. And hats off to them for that fantastic run. But again, it's not like they were the Nuggets, the top seed, and kind of that strong team that were not unexpected to make the finals, if you will.
Right, exactly. Let's be honest. Some of the finals teams recently over the last few years have been, from a historical perspective, you know, from an overall talent perspective, been kind of weak for finals teams. Like that Phoenix Suns team that went against the Milwaukee Bucks, I do not think on paper or in reality that that was a good enough team to be in the NBA finals. I really don't. And then we've had the Heat make it twice recently, et cetera. But yeah, you know, like I said before, it was good to see that the Denver Nuggets won the title this year. And you had some friends that were Denver fans, and that meant a lot to them. But yeah, speaking of the Celtics, we played a game on NBA Live 08 on a work in progress classic teams roster mod. And you and I used the 85-86 Bulls, and we went against the 85-86 Celtics. And this mod, Andrew, is awesome. The court, the jerseys, just the way it plays overall outside of Larry Bird needing some tweaking because he was throwing it down all over the place. but the action was awesome. We had to lean heavily on Jordan and Orlando Woolridge. Jordan put up 53 points in 6 minute quarters for us. We ended up losing by a couple points to the Celtics. Very realistic outcome with that Bulls team against that historic Celtics team. But yeah, we connected over Parsec, and you actually hosted. And it worked so well that I want you to host more. You know, it works well when I host, and now we've confirmed that it still works really well when you host. I was able to chain together dribbles, do jump stops in traffic and throw it down. I was able to go into the post and shoot fadeaways. I hit a couple of mid-range shots with the Iceman, George Gervin, and some spinning shots with Jordan. And, you know, I was catching lobs with Orlando Woolridge. You would find me when I was cutting behind the defense and everything. And still blows me away. You live on the opposite side of the world. You're in Australia. You know, I live roughly an hour outside of Boston, Massachusetts in the States. And it worked good enough where I just wanted to keep playing. You know what I mean? There wasn't hardly any lag. And yeah, it just blew me away. That mod is great. NBA Live 08 for the PC can be really surprising as far as from, you know, a gameplay standpoint. And that session was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was quite excited to preview that mod. It's been one that's kind of been there in the workshop, on the workbench for far too long now. Started years ago, and it's actually a fair way along, as you can see, as far as art being in place. They do need to make some adjustments to ratings and tendencies, such as they are in Live 08, of course. And it is the ultimate Jordan roster. It is a celebration of Michael Jordan's career. At present, 15 teams from Jordan's career, one for each year of his career, and 15 opponents, one from each year of his career as well. Corresponding to that, the idea is to get it done and then put some bonus teams in as well, so that it's not So there's a bit more variety for each year. At the moment, I've kind of based it on the Jordan Challenge, the original Jordan Challenge. So there is two Jazz teams, for example, whereas getting the Rockets in there for the 97, for one, would be a good idea, I think. But for the moment, I've got what's there is in place, and I'd like to add some bonus teams to it. And yeah, I'd love to get that done. It is on the to-do list, and playing that mod, I definitely do want to pick it up again and get that finished, because I suggested that we play a work in progress mod, and you weren't too sure, because of course, you know, we wanted to have that fun session, but I knew that this particular mod was fairly stable. At least some of the teams have had the ratings edited, so I threw it on there, and I could tell that you were very excited by the prospect of a classic teams roster for Live 08, and yeah, that is a project that I want to convert for 07, 06, and 2005. I think I'm going to enjoy it most in 06 and 2005, but even in 08, it was a blast to play, and I'm really happy with how it's shaping up.
Yeah, that 96-97 Rockets team is, in my opinion, it's one of my favorite team and basketball teams of all time. It's one of my favorite NBA teams of all time, but also one of the biggest what-ifs in NBA history if they were able to get by the Utah Jazz and face the Bulls in the finals, and we finally would have gotten our Hakeem Olajuwon versus Michael Jordan NBA finals. And you know, I've watched game 6 of the Western Conference Finals series between the Rockets and Jazz many times. The full games are on YouTube, and I'm going to agree with Bill Walton. You know, I'm a big Clyde Drexler fan. But throughout that broadcast, he was like, get the ball to Drexler. Why are they not getting the ball to Clyde Drexler? You know, Drexler has it going. Get him the ball. And the Rockets just refused to get him the ball enough and refused to make him their primary scorer in that game. And he looked like he was unstoppable whenever he did get the ball. So it's disappointing that they lost that series, you know, obviously on a John Stockton 3 that just was devastating and ended the Rockets season. But yeah, what an unbelievably fun and memorable NBA finals that would have been with Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman versus Hakeem, Barkley, and Drexler.
That's what a lot of people had picked going into the season, with the Rockets acquiring Barkley in the offseason of 1996. And of course, your Ultimate Classic Teams roster includes the 97 Rockets.
Yeah, absolutely. They were in any Classic Teams roster that I create, they are priority. Like I definitely want to get them in there. They're a fun video game team, and when they were all healthy, their record in real life was absolutely ridiculous. And of course, Drexler only stayed for one more season after that. He retired after the 97-98 season, and then they had the unbelievable forgettable season with Pippen in 98-99. Washed up Pippen. Barkley wasn't his, you know, former self. Pippen and Barkley reportedly didn't get along while they were on the team, and Pippen didn't like Barkley's work ethic.
What a surprise. What a surprise that Pippen didn't get along with somebody.
Yeah, how about that? By the way, I still refuse to read Pippen's book. I have no interest in that. But yeah, that was a super fun session on Live 08. And while there isn't a gameplay video of that up on the NLSC YouTube, we did put up a gameplay video of our NBA Live 18 session, where I surprised you a little bit when I said, let's use the Lakers.
Yes.
And this is not Andrew's favorite Lakers team. This would not be Andrew's first choice to use on NBA Live 18, but I was like, you know what? Let's do something different. Let's use a pre-LeBron Lakers team versus a non-Duncan Spurs team. So two teams that were not, you know, at their peak and whatnot. And so we were using the Lonzo Ball, Caldwell Pope, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Julius Randle, Brooke Lopez, Andre Ingram, he made an appearance in the game because he is on the roster, and Luol Deng Lakers versus the Spurs. And that game always surprises me.
Yes.
When I revisit it, especially when I revisit it with another human. And you and I were able to, you know, get out and run. We were able to throw each other lobs. We were able to do a few awesome and very realistic pick and rolls and pick and pops. A lot of the shooting animations are just spot on in that game. I really like the way they did Lonzo Ball's shot. It's fun to play, more fun to play defense on Live 18 than it is on Live 19, because the steal system is better for the user and actually more realistic. You can actually get those poke steals, and it's not always press steal to foul and whatnot. So we had a few of those with Lonzo Ball, and I actually had one in the second half with Lakers legend Luol Deng. But it was incredibly tough to stop Davis Bertans and Pau Gasol, because they were shooting from the outside. Both of them were hitting threes. Gasol was also working in the mid-range and in the paint, and they put up one hell of a fight, but we ended up squeaking that one out.
Very satisfying victory, obviously, in that game. And it is fun to play with teams that you wouldn't normally use, because it is a fresh experience. It's why I'm always looking for different teams to play with, interesting teams to play with when I retro game, and I know you're the same. And we certainly love those oddball teams that have what-ifs, like the 2006 76ers, obviously, in Live 06 or 2K6. But yeah, that was a good choice to use those rookie Lonzo Lakers. And it did produce a lot of fun moments, as you said. And yeah, pulling out the victory like that. Free throws are a bit hard in that game, but I do love the steal mechanics. Shooting in general could have... I did like shooting better in 19. Did like it until the final patch messed that up. But Live 18, I had a lot of fun with that back in the day playing Ultimate Team. So I was playing it solo. And it was even more fun co-op, as you pointed out. That is often the case with games, especially games that are a little bit rough, because you do have that shared experience, and you're making up for any AI deficiencies with teammates, because you have another human, another brain to make plays along with you. But even though I had a lot of fun with Live 18 back in the day, I still kind of remember it as being rougher than it was, and there are problems with animations, as is the case with Live throughout that generation, really, and even going back to the seventh generation as well. But I was reminded why I enjoyed it so much, that the strong points really did stand out during that session.
Yeah, I think that any gameplay experience will basically be better if you're playing co-op with another person. Another person who knows what they're doing on the sticks and who you enjoy playing with. So I'm sure that it felt better than if you had visited by yourself, right? You know, just the fact that it was you and I connecting. And everything. I think that NBA Live 19 improved on shots on the move. Those are much better, in my opinion, in NBA Live 19 over NBA Live 18. And I think the post game overall has more to it and is more fluid and better in NBA Live 19 over Live 18. But I think defense is more fun to play and more realistic on Live 18. And the lighting is also better on NBA Live 18. I like the atmosphere. I like the way the crowd reacts more than on NBA Live 19. The arenas are more alive. I think you would agree. Also, you get the benefit of NBA Live 18 of listening to Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy, right?
That's
as
huge.
Opposed to
the
obnoxious Jay Williams.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as far as immersion and atmosphere and whatnot, NBA Live 18 wins for me. And they did make some improvements over Live 16 when it comes to fixing that whole issue of like momentum, right? Where you would make a dribble move in like NBA Live 16 and your player would be forced like 4 feet into a direction you didn't intend to go, right? Like that stuff doesn't happen in NBA Live 18. So they did do a pretty good job with player movement there. And I want to give a shout out actually to Bucky T, who after I posted the highlights on Twitter of that NBA Live 18 Lakers versus Spurs session, he quote tweeted it and stated that it's amazing how something along the lines of it's amazing how if you know basketball and you know how to play the games and whatnot, how good you can make even a rough release look. And he was complimenting the way we played. The way we played together, the way we know the game, the way we know the players and whatnot. So shout out to Bucky T. That was a really nice comment.
Yeah, we love the support from Bucky and all of our wonderful followers and listeners. And look, you only have to go back to your Live 14 footage that we talked about to see how the game can look so much better. Even a very rough game like Live 14 can look so much better when the person on the sticks knows their stuff, knows how to play basketball games, and knows the sport of basketball. You know, I went back and played 2K18 this past week. As you know, I sent you some clips. And It didn't really change my mind. I wasn't expecting it to. I did just go back to get some screenshots for a future feature. And, of course, I was reminded of the balloons. In fact, that was one of the things I wanted to get a screenshot of. But I'd forgotten that even after we had 60 frames per second replays in 2K17, they throttled it back to 30fps in 2K18. And I was also playing Live 08 on PS3 this past week, and that is one of our mailbag topics this week, the mailbag trivia. And I was surprised by the smoother replays in 08 compared to 2K18. And of course, again, going back from 2K17, they just missed on so many marks in 2K18.
I'll never understand. And even on the PS5 and Xbox Series X consoles, Andrew, the replays and whatnot, they're in 30fps. I'll just never understand how we were able to get the smooth, awesome-looking replays, whether it be at halftime, whether it be between quarters, whether it be after something cool happens, like during the live action and all that stuff. I'll never understand how on past games like NBA 2K17, they were able to be smooth as butter on, you know, like the PC version. And then all of a sudden, we get to PS5, Xbox Series X Gen, and then we get to the newer PC version games, like you mentioned, 2K18, and all of a sudden, all of those replays are 30fps. It's like, this is something I would think about if I was creating a game, right? Or like if I was in like a room with other developers and we were discussing about, you know, how we wanted to implement certain features into the game and how we wanted to, direction in relation to that, I would be like, yeah, we would definitely want to make these, you know, these cutscenes or these replays and, you know, the halftime replays, all of that stuff. We want to make that in 60fps because that's smooth. That's way more pleasing to the eye than 30fps. We should be beyond 30fps. So yeah, I agree with you. Just to let our audience know, I did not request any of those 2K18 clips from Andrew. He sent them unsolicited, including a screenshot of one of the balloons falling into the crowd. He knows I have PTSD about that, but he still sent that. He is a good friend, but I think he thought it would be funny.
But also a jerk, yes.
Yeah, he's all, but also a jerk, but that's okay. So, 2K18, a lot wrong with that game. We discussed that on a prior show. And unfortunately, that was the beginning of you and I kind of souring on the 2K basketball games.
It definitely was a turning point, and I think there's no denying that when you look at all the design choices they made, and of course bringing in the neighborhood and what that's led to with the city in the current generation. Yeah, it's unfortunate turning point, unfortunate design choices at every turn. They have corrected course on some of those things, obviously, but then made other mistakes, or there have been some things that were changed for good, and I say change for good, but certainly not for the better. But one of our sessions this week, Derek, or last week rather, really challenged us, and it is in NBA Jam on Fire Edition, which is one of our favorite games, and playing through the road trip as we are, and we usually do roll through the challenges. The goal challenge does provide a bit of a, well, challenge, but we hit one that may be one of the hardest challenges in the game, up there with the going up against Blake Griffin with the over-the-top 4 points for dunks. That's a tough one too, but continuous play, where it's just one quarter of continuous play, there's no inbounds, you've got to scoop the ball up and keep scoring, and if you don't, the CPU will, and man, that got us. And it's not often that On Fire Edition gets us like that.
In my opinion, that is the hardest challenge on Road Trip.
It's up there.
For our audience to know, it's a gold challenge. And basically the way it works is the entire game is only 2 minutes, so it's a 2 minute game. And there's no inbounding the ball. So right when the ball goes through the hoop, whatever player grabs it, it's that team's possession. The shot clock is shortened as well. But if you're not on top of getting stops and or getting under the hoop after they make a shot and being able to grab the ball before they do, you can go down 8-0 in like 15 seconds
easily. Yeah,
right? Easily. And actually the game where we ended up conquering that challenge, where we ended up winning it, I think we lost 3 or 4 times before we ended up winning it. The game we won, they went up 8-0, I want to say, in that game. But then we went on our own run where I hit a three, I think you grabbed the ball after it went in and dunked it, and then I grabbed the ball and then I passed it to you for an alley-oop, and then you dunked it, and then we scored again. So I think we ended up like reversing that 8-0 run, and we ended up leading while they still had 8 points. But that is a super tough challenge. It's a really short game. It's really high intensity. And you know how everybody wants to look at their phone every now and then, no matter what they're doing. There is no looking at your phone during that challenge.
No,
you cannot look. You're not looking away from the TV. You have to be 100% paying attention. We did end up winning that. I absolutely love playing the road trip. We were using our favorite team in that game, the Seattle Supersonics, where I was on Peyton and you were on Sean Kemp. And every time we play it, I'm like, damn, we got to play this more. So
yeah,
hopefully
sure.
let's try to connect on that again this week.
Absolutely. It has to be a part of our rotation, and I'm sure it always will be. Even after we finish the road trip, it's going to be fun to revisit some of our favorite challenges. And just how good was, and how fantastic, I should say, was Road Trip revolutionizing the arcade ladder, the arcade campaign mode. Because Classic Campaign and even the Remix Tour in Jam 2010, they're great, as I said in my retrospective, but Road Trip just took it to a whole new level. But it's funny, the game we won, the attempt that was successful in that challenge, I didn't think it was our best effort, and we kind of almost, it almost slipped away at the end as well. I thought the game we played before, that we lost at the last second because they did get a couple of steals and scooped it up after making the buckets, I thought that was actually a better effort overall, but we pulled it out, and that's what matters.
Right, and just to let our audience know, we were against LeBron and Wade in the Heat. So that was during the Miami Heat Challenge, and they were not shy in making LeBron and Wade ridiculously tough to beat in that game, which makes sense. But the other game that we also connected on was a 1978 basketball video game, which came out for the Intellivision, literally called Basketball. And listen, I understand the game came out in 78, Andrew, but every player in that game sucks.
Yeah.
That's what I said to you in the Twitter chat. Everybody shoots.
Well they're plumbers and dentists, right? So, of course, they can't play basketball.
Right. Oh, my God. Don't get me started on that. But, they, you know, every player in that game sucks at shooting. You can't throw a pass without it being intercepted unless your receiver is, like, right next to you. Right? Like, all passes are intercepted unless the guy is, like, right next to you. It doesn't matter if you're shooting. It's really cool that they have in a game that old that you have the ability to do a jump shot and a set shot. And set shots are a little bit more accurate. But both shoot, you just shoot a terrible percentage. So basically, this game that Andrew and I played against each other, Andrew ended up being the victor. He won the game. But I would say that both of us combined probably shot about 10% from the floor. And I would also say, if that, right. And then I think it was like a 10 or 12 minute game. I would, to be completely honest with you, there were probably about 30 blocks.
Yeah, that's just one quarter. We played one quarter and a bit, basically. And that
yeah, we played like one quarter. Right. So we didn't technically finish the game. We played like one quarter. But it's cool to revisit. It's 3-on-3, full court. And if you ever actually ever played that in real life, it gets super sloppy really fast. But in the video game, it kind of works, especially in a game that came out in 1978. But it does have moments where you can tell that it can be competitive, like it can be true competition, because timing blocks is important, right? You have to make sure that you have some room to shoot because it's so easy to get blocks. And if you are going to try to make a play, if you are going to try to make a pass, you need to be savvy with it. So like Double Dribble, where true competition can take place, it's the same thing with that Intellivision basketball game from 1978.
And one of the reasons, in fact, the main reason why you connected with me to play that is because it is a two-player only game, so I needed somebody to play it with me so I can get the footage for a video retrospective, which will be coming soon, now that we have that footage. And thank you for being keen to do that. And I know we're always keen to connect, but that's a tough sell. You want to play this game that was actually released in 1980, I looked it up, but developed in 78 and sat on the shelf until the Intellivision's launch. So, you know, developed
before. Yeah, but you're talking, Andrew, though, you're talking about the same person who asked you to connect on NBA Live 07 for the Xbox 360.
Sure.
And play against the great Mustachio, Adam Morrison. And not only that, afterwards you accepted the fact that I was going to upload it to the NLSC YouTube. So I am up for anything.
That's true.
When it comes to basketball gaming. And when you're experiencing it with another human being or a friend or a brother or something like that, like it makes the experience worth it. And we can laugh at the game's shortcomings. You know, we can praise it where it's warranted as well. But yeah, that wasn't even a bad session. I actually had fun with it.
No, I'm glad because I was looking forward to getting that footage, covering that game. The in-game title is Basketball, but on the box it actually says NBA Basketball. It is in fact the very first NBA licensed game. So that's its place in basketball gaming history.
Andrew, I squinted though, and I couldn't see Dr. J. I squinted. I tried to see Dr. J or Daryl Dawkins or Dave Cowens, and I couldn't make them out on the
Well,
court.
that's because it was George Gervin versus David Thompson, obviously.
Ah, oh, okay, that's
Yeah,
why.
you see? Yeah.
It wasn't the
But
fact that the players like were cut in half, like they have no no eyes, no nose. They're cut in
the
half.
same
They're just
generic model,
blobs out there, right? Yeah.
yeah. Actually, it's I do actually have that game, and working in television, I do have that game, the real cartridge. But we were playing on the PS2 release, Intellivision Lives, that compilation of emulated games that the original developers did put out there in, I think, 2006. That was released, and it was a PC release as well, a couple of years before that. So yeah, more convenient to play that over PCSX2 rather than trying to hook up an Intellivision to a VCR and then into an upscaler and then into my Elgato. So I think we did it. Technically speaking, I think we did it the right way.
Yeah, no, and it was fun, and I shared some clips. What my favorite clip? I'm just and it was me that did it, Andrew. It was me that froze you in time. But my favorite clip that I shared in relation to this session was Andrew tried to take a jump shot from, I'd say, about 18 feet, right elbow extended, and I blocked him, just snatched the ball out of the air, and in disbelief, Andrew was frozen on the court as I headed down the other end and smoked a like 35, 40 foot close to half court Steph Curry range three. It was cool because obviously that game glitches a little bit, right? But it was very fitting that your player glitched there and wasn't allowed to move after I, swatted your shot right out of the air. And then, like I said in the tweet, you could only watch in horror as I headed down the other end of the court and smoked that long three. But yeah, you can have fun moments like that, even on a basketball game that came out in 1978.
Well, you and I love history, right? So whether it's basketball history, basketball gaming history, so looking into that, looking what games were like, seeing how they were developed, what the developers were thinking. Obviously, that is a very simple representation of basketball, accelerated clock as it is, much like the accelerated clock in their other sports games, including the soccer game, the association football game, where you can run off one side of the screen and appear on the other. The best way to tackle a player, actually, to run off the screen and appear on the other side. But no, the Intellivision was my first console, actually, so I have a lot of nostalgia for that. Didn't actually play NBA Basketball until many years later. I think until that compilation came out. So then I had to find that game and actually got it for $20 on eBay. So that was one of my best pickups. It is the oldest game in my collection. I think the only older game really that's mainstream is Atari Basketball, or Basketball for Atari, I should say. So it is one of the granddaddies of the genre. And yeah, I'm looking forward to profiling that in Wayback Wednesday with that video retrospective, Derek, because we do need to recognize it, where basketball gaming came from.
And playing that makes you recognize really how far we've come with basketball video games, with technology and whatnot. But, I can also put myself in the shoes of those people who played the game back then and enjoyed it, right? Like, I can see why people played it and enjoyed it. Like, there's definitely moments where you're playing it and it's like this something cool happens, right? And you and I could be competitive on that game. Hell, I could host an NLC tournament on that game technically. So I see it. No, that will not be a tournament that I host anytime soon.
Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, nb-live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at NBA-live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community.
Now, before we get to the responses to my mailbag question, there was a tweet that I wanted to read off, and it's related to the possibility of having a NBA 2K24 dunk meter. Every dunk attempt should have a meter in NBA 2K24. the speed of that meter should also speed up or slow down. Dunks can't go in unless it's green. Casuals that say shooting is a skill gap right now should experience the same things with dunking. And then there was a reply to this tweet. This is why everyone who says that 2K should listen to people who are elite at the game are just wrong. This would be the quickest way to turn off 90% of the player base who already can't shoot threes. But now comp guys want to take dunking from them as well. LOL. So my problem with this, Andrew, is who says that this guy who's recommending a 2K24 dunk meter in order to, I don't know what, try to frustrate people or create a bigger skill gap or something like that. Who says that this guy knows what's best for the consumer base? Because obviously he doesn't, right? But who says that this guy is more skillful than, say, you or I or any offline player or, you know, other online players and whatnot? Why does he think that implementing a dunk meter, which a dunk meter shouldn't exist in a basketball video game, in my opinion. I'm sorry. Like, there's to having to time a dunk, which is basically a play where you're over the rim and you're putting the ball effortlessly into the basket and making that this like huge skill gap thing. That just doesn't make sense. Okay. I think it's silly. I think you would agree. You're not a fan of the dunk meter. You're not even a fan of the alley-oop meter.
Yeah.
Right. But my biggest problem with this isn't even as much as stating that he wants a dunk meter in 2K24 to create a bigger skill gap. It's the guy with over 100,000 followers calling this guy who wants the dunk meter in 2K24 elite. He's calling this guy an elite competitive gamer. Who says he is?
Yeah.
Right. And who says putting a dunk meter, which doesn't belong in a basketball video game, who says that, you know, it's like a quick time event, like you've said before, but who says that that guy's better than you or better than me or better than people like other offline gamers or other people online? And they're talking about the shooting thing. Shooting is a problem in NBA 2K23. They didn't even release the game with normal release timing. In a basketball video game, it either has to be late or it has to be early. The shot contest system is a huge problem. It's very unrealistic the way that works, especially when you're playing against a computer, for example, and you can hold them to like 10% from the floor because they miss 100% of semi-contested and contested shots, right? So like using shooting as an example in this, in relation to true skill gap or being great at the game and everything, that's ridiculous in itself. But calling somebody who wants a dunk meter in NBA 2K24 like an elite competitor or an elite competitive gamer, what am I missing here? Like that, like, is this what the online scene is now? This ridiculousness?
Well, I mean, I definitely think that the first tweet is an elitist attitude. Whether he is an elite player or not is, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with him. May or may not be. But it definitely is an elitist attitude. And I guess that's why how I read that second tweet, that response to him as, I mean, yes, he may or may not be elite, but certainly he is expressing an elitist view. So I feel that was pushing back on that and saying that the elitists, whether they are elite or they simply have that gatekeeping mentality, they want to have this stuff in the game because they think it will make them elite or the game elite or elite competition and the proper competitive game. So I agree with the spirit of the second tweet, if not necessarily the wording or whether he is accurate in saying that that first person is elite. It is an elitist attitude. So that's kind of how I read it. And yeah, I don't think that is going to make the game any better. I don't think it does promote a skill gap realistically, especially because you're still going to have animations that are determined by the dice roll behind the scenes. Yes, the animation package. Yes, the input to say, okay, finish this way, finish that way, finish with a fancy dunk, whatever. But it's still, the specific animation is still chosen by the game. It is not Rocket League where you are controlling your player character, in that case, the rocket car, totally and in a physics-based way that it actually is skillful. You're letting an animation play out. So, and the same with green releases as well. So it's not as skillful as they say. It is saying that the game has to be all about online comp, which is also ridiculous. The online and offline will share some mechanics to some extent. The core mechanics are going to be shared between online and offline play, so everyone needs to be catered to at the end of the day. So yeah, I just don't like those suggestions, and I was happy to see some people pushing back on that, because the competitive scene is ruining basketball in what is a basketball game.
Well, one of my problems with that, Andrew, is that this guy with over 100,000 followers quote tweeted that person and fed that ego and fed that mindset by saying, well, you're an elite gamer.
I guess,
you're an elite 2K player. You're an elite competitive player. But who says that that guy is that, right? Who says that a dunk meter being placed in the game caters to elite players, elite virtual basketball players? That's the thing that I can't stand everything that I hear about the online scene today. I mean, we have people arguing on Twitter, you know, going back and forth about, you know, left-right cheese being the most skilled players. The people who execute left-right cheese the best are the most skilled players on the game. What? Like, that's what basketball, that's what the competitive scene is. That's the elite gamer, the person who can best do left-right cheese. Like, that's not my idea of virtual basketball. That's not my idea of competitive virtual basketball, and it's certainly not a realistic representation in comparison to real basketball. So I hate the gatekeeping. I hate this elitist attitude. I can't stand the fact that there's so many people out there that think cheesing the game makes them elite. You know what I mean? That makes that they like an elite competitive gamer. So I think that was my biggest problem with that. I'm just glad you and I stay away from that online scene. And to be honest with you, and I've said it on past podcasts, the fact that you have gotten away from that online scene over the last couple of years, and, you know, you and I have been connecting on Parsec playing games, you've been, you know, uploading more video content, et cetera. Like, I think that that's been super healthy for you.
Oh, it absolutely has been. And I saw the writing on the wall with the online scene, the focus on the meta, the toxicity in attitudes, and it's just been going on for years now. It's not getting any better. It's only getting worse. And yeah, that gatekeeping is terrible. And I do agree again with the spirit of that second tweet, pushing back on that, because we are seeing with these elitists, whether they are elite gamers or not, they are certainly elitists and gatekeepers, saying don't listen to the casuals. And it's getting to the point where sim heads and people who really care about basketball and realistic basketball are being called casuals, which is just a ridiculous use of the term. So yeah, it's something to push back on. And yeah, I was disheartened to see that, but not surprised.
Right. I guess my idea of, you know, true competition isn't, hey, my badge is better than your badge.
Yeah.
So now my badge outdoes your badge when I go up for a shot. And it doesn't matter if I'm better at basketball. It doesn't matter, you know, at virtual basketball. It doesn't matter if I know the game better. It doesn't matter if I created space or not. My badge is better. So I'm going to win this matchup. And like, that's not, you know, the game is filled with so many artificial boosts and players winning that shouldn't be able to win, but they play a silly brand of basketball, but it works because they're loaded with better artificial boosts and they know how to go side to side to side to side to side to side, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's just super annoying, the whole conversation. Watching the footage, it looks terrible. And yeah, I am just absolutely not a fan. So that's my rant for this episode. We've had a lot of positive, Andrew, on this show, talking about our Parsec sessions on both 2Ks and Lives, and even games like we talked about, you know, Intellivision Basketball. But yeah, I'm not expecting NBA 2K24 to have a better online scene. In fact, I feel like it's going to be exactly the same. But I do hope that overall the gameplay is tighter and just overall more enjoyable for, you know, the offline users out there.
Definitely.
So Andrew, why don't we get to the mailbag? And I actually had a question for the community, and then you also had trivia for the community, so that's the way we'll end this episode. So I asked the community, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your excitement level for NBA 2K24? And the bonus question with that was, what platform do you plan on getting the game for? Now, remember how excited we were to get new releases of NBA 2K and NBA Live? you know, showing up for the midnight release for NBA 2K13. You know, we were obviously elated to get our hands on NBA 2K11, you know, when we heard about everything that was going to be in that game. And then once we ended up getting our hands on it, we were blown away. You know, we had the super excitement of getting NBA Live 2004, especially you, because you weren't super fond of their direction in NBA Live 2003. So you were craving something a little bit different from EA Sports NBA Live, and you know, your excitement was through the roof to get your hands on that new game. So, you know, when I think about a new game coming out, I think about my excitement that I had for like past releases.
Same.
And
yeah.
And so I'll answer this question first. My excitement personally to get the game on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say is a 7. And that might sound high for some people because I wasn't super fond of NBA 2K23 and I'd been critical. But the reason is because not only am I a collector, but just having a new game in my library, something new to sink my teeth into, whether it be modding for the PC version or checking out the new features on the PS5 Xbox Series X version, for me, that's always exciting, right? Let's say EA Sports came back and they had, you know, NBA Live 25. And let's say NBA Live 25 was not a great showing, but NBA Live 26 came out the next year, I would still be super pumped to kind of get my hands on it. You know what I mean? Because it's another game to add to the collection. It's something else I can check out, to look at. I can look at all the ratings. I can look at the new things they're doing with the menus. I can, you know, try to locate some of the, you know, little gameplay changes they made, you know, the new features, stuff like that. Because even though I think that NBA 2K24 is going to be very much like NBA 2K23, yeah, I am still excited to get my hands on it. So there's two ways I'm answering this. For the future of the series and for consumers, I give my excitement rating probably about a 4. It's much lower. And the reason is because I think that there's a lot of frustration out there with the series direction. I don't believe that the majority of people who are playing online are having a good time for the reasons we've mentioned before. Because of all of the microtransactions, which I don't dabble in myself, so it doesn't affect me personally, but it does affect the consumer base, which we care about, because of those microtransactions. Because of the gameplay that's not balanced, and I don't think that it will be balanced again in NBA 2K24, because of all of those reasons, I'm not exactly excited for the future of the series. I'm not optimistic about the future of the series. And I'm also, you know, frustrated for our fellow gamer. So for me personally, getting my hands on it, a 7. But for the consumer base and for the future, I'd give it a 4.
Now that makes sense. And I'm in a similar boat there. I would put mine at about a 5, just kind of in the middle right there, in that I think it's going to be a fine game for the most part. There's still a lot about 2K23 that I like, and if 2K24 can be much the same but with some improvements and without major downgrades, then I think it's going to be a fine game and might even spend more time with it than I did 2K23, which I did spend a fair amount of time with for the first few months of its release. But at this point, I'm just too cynical, jaded by being let down by previous seasons. The previous seasons are not as exciting as they used to be. They are very abbreviated. They're not as detailed. There's no competition there, obviously. So you're not looking at two games coming out and being excited for one. And okay, this game's doing this, and what's the other game countering with? So you don't.
But have Andrew, how is that possible? Everything gets better over time, doesn't it?
I mean, supposedly, yeah. But there's plenty of examples. plenty of examples that we grew up with that show that new isn't always better. But I will put it at a 5 because I'm intrigued to see what they will do. There's always some level of anticipation with a new game coming out and interest in seeing what it is going to do. So, yeah, I'll still say a 5.
That makes sense. So is that like an overall grade? Is that like how you feel about your, you know, optimism for the future of the series, your, you know, the consumer base, et cetera?
I think so. I think there's going to be a certain level of quality that it won't dip below, but that being said, it's hard to go above a 5 at the same time. It's hard to go much higher than that because the writing has been on the wall with the way they're going with some of that elitist approach to the online scene. And there's been some issues that have been in the game for many years, many generations of NBA 2K. So I do want to temper my expectations.
Yeah, I still don't believe that the suits understand the direction the game should be going into, and I know that's a bold statement.
Oh well,
But
they did. They
with
know. They know it for what they want, which is recurrent revenue, right? So they're spot on there. But for an actual quality experience,
right. Let's
yeah.
put it this way: it's not being made for in the best interest of the
No,
consumer.
that's right.
Let's put it that way. That's probably the best way to word it. So yeah, let's get to the community responses. There were quite a few.
So Teddy Bear the Gamer says, "I have to see what they have to offer for the sim gamers like ourselves. Everything is centered around my player as of late, which it absolutely is, my career and the connected experiences."
Yeah, I think the offline content, a lot of it is there for show. We've talked about it before with like the inaccuracies and the rush jobs, and the lack of attention to detail on the all-time teams, the classic teams, the My NBA Eras rosters and whatnot. And I know that Teddy Bear the Gamer is really big into the My NBA Eras idea, right? And he's been trying to play that, you know, that mode as well and play that content. But yeah, it does get frustrating. And I think that the game isn't very sim from or realistic at all from a gameplay perspective for all the reasons that we've mentioned before. It feels like the game is constantly pushing you into different directions that you don't wish to go in. It's constantly sucking you into other players. The game is loaded with canned animations. You know this. The canned animations are pretty constant. So yeah, I would say that the game is not made for people like Teddy Bear the Gamer, which is why he also enjoys you know, the classics more. He often enjoys picking those games up more because he gets, you know, a better gameplay experience that's suited for him.
And we can certainly relate to that in recent years. Uncle Sam's Reject says about a 5 to a 6. I would be lying if I said I wasn't going to get it. With crossplay, if executed correctly, this could potentially be one of the most fun years. I will remain strictly console though. I will just continue to mod 23, 22, 21, 20, 14 on the PC side.
Yeah, I think that he's got the right idea, right? So PC wise, I still mod NBA 2K14. I still use mods for it and update the mods that I currently have. Same with other classics like NBA 2K17. Still modding NBA 2K19. We play modded content still, my brother and I, on NBA 2K22 for the PC. So I think having that in your back pocket as a basketball gamer and having the ways and means to, you know, get your hands on that PC version while also possibly getting it for the console as well, I think that that can be incredibly helpful. And, you know, you getting some enjoyment from not only the newest title, but some of your past titles as well. So he's got the right idea.
And of course, as far as getting it on multiple platforms, I'll be getting it on PC, PS5. I'll probably get the PS5 version as I did last year. I'm thinking about the Black Mamba edition, so I have that digital version of PS4. And maybe I'll collect a physical copy in time as well. As you know, I do like to collect my physical copies. But to the point of different editions, Derek, Rock, Jeff Cortinas, says, my excitement level is NBA League Pass. LMAO. And yeah, that is a big selling point of the 25th anniversary edition. I think that's what you said you were thinking about getting that edition simply for the League Pass.
Yeah, exactly. I mentioned that on a recent show. So he's got the right idea with that as well. It's cheaper to get NBA League Pass through NBA 2K than it is to get League Pass on its own. So I think what I'm going to end up doing is I'm going to get the PC version for the base price. So just the lowest price you can get the game for. But then for the console version, I'll probably get the League Pass version. I've been trying to motivate myself to get back into watching the Celtics regularly with my brother, and then watching more NBA action in general. So this may be the year for that, and League Pass would obviously help. I know that Rock was playing NBA 2K23 for the first couple of months. I remember seeing some of his footage from him playing online, and he was showing some box scores and whatnot, but that game died pretty fast for him. Right? Pretty sure it died in the first couple of months. So unfortunately, that's the way it is with a lot of gamers now is, you know, with the 2K series, is they'll play it for, you know, a couple of months. They'll be grinding away, trying to get their player, you know, to be effective on the court or where they can actually try to get some enjoyment out of the game. But then after those couple of months, their activity dies down.
And next up we have Love the Orange, says, I'm an old head. Played this game since 2K1 and many games before it. I can't grow out of it. It's my time vice. I'm happiest to see the audio comms tracking to ban players who are toxic, is ruining the game, needs to equal out builds so there's less meta builds, more diversity. And had a bit of a back and forth with Love the Orange. Shout out to Love the Orange. Nosy stuff with when it comes to basketball. Always great conversations there. Tip my hat to him for pushing back on some of the ridiculous narratives out there that I just don't have the patience to engage with myself. So shout out to you for that. But yeah, obviously the meta builds have ruined the online scene. As I was talking to him about it, I just can't go into the rec anymore. Even Team Pro-Am, it's more fun to play with the guys, but the opponents and the toxicity of the scene just make it garbage, just to make it really tough to get into. So the online scene is just something I avoid, and I totally get where he's coming from there. I know you do too. But yeah, to his point, you know, we are collectors too. We are hardcore basketball gamers, so we will get the new game regardless.
Yeah, and Love the Orange, shout out to you. You gave me a nice compliment, actually. He in that comment section, he stated that I feed his nostalgia with my Twitter feed because I'm constantly posting, you know, footage from, you know, past basketball games. I had 2K1 footage recently with a Steve Francis dunk, which actually that tweet gained a lot of traction. You know, I'm posting NBA Live 2004, Live 08, et cetera, you know, NBA 2K8, NBA 2K6. If you do not follow me on Twitter at D43G, I definitely recommend, you know, following me if you love basketball video games, because I'm posting a lot of footage. And yeah, definitely, I agree with him. He mentions the meta builds. He mentions the toxicity. Who really wants to be part of that?
Yeah.
And that's why I think that the online scene is such a mess.
It's not satisfying, even when you win. We had some wins where we're like, we won the game, but man, that was a struggle. So, and that's not a fun time. Next up, we have Dante Campana says, we'll wait to see what the gameplay looks like before pre-ordering it. I'm an offline player only, and the authenticity blunders kill the immersion factor, in my opinion. The game's first ever screenshot features Kobe sporting a black upper armband in a yellow Lakers jersey. Why? Unreal. Yeah, and you notice those details like that. When you're a simhead, you notice the attention to detail, or lack thereof.
Yeah, I like his wait-and-see approach, and I think, you know, Teddy Bear the Gamer said something like that as well. You know, there's a couple other people who responded with kind of like a wait and see approach. I definitely don't blame you. Wait for those gameplay videos to come out. Wait till you hear more about the features. Wait until you hear more about the modes that you really want to dive into. You know, if you are into the online scene, you know, kind of try to keep an eye on what's changed and what, you know, if there's anything new in it that might get you hooked or make you want to jump in, etc., which is probably not the case, but you know, we can hope. But yeah, I know that Kobe screenshot had a lot of problems with it, right? Those jerseys back then when he was wearing number 8 for the Lakers were not that tight. Like, that jersey is completely attached to his body in those screenshots. The face, the cyber face looks mostly the same as it did last year. I would expect more realism out of the PS5 Series X consoles. I would expect them to be able to do more. And clearly that's not the case. You know, somebody else mentioned that he's lacking muscle tone. Yeah, I mean, he's got the Gumby arms there too, where he doesn't really look like a real human being. And he's also too skinny there with not enough muscle as well. But yeah, there was, you know, his accessories, like he mentioned. Yeah, there's a lot going on wrong in those screenshots, which how do they even... Like, marketing the game, right? And, you know, the first screenshots for the game. How can you not get those right? Like, I don't know. Like, it's not something... Like, if I was to release... And if I had the NBA license and I was to release an NBA basketball game, I would try to make sure that whatever I sent to the marketing department was, like, awesome and spot-on accuracy-wise. I just don't know why they do this every year.
I mean, I guess it's gotten to the point where people like us maybe in the minority as far as being willing to speak out, and Dante of course, about these inaccuracies, because people are focused on that online scene and how many badges are there and what can we do online and what does the city look like, what does the neighborhood look like, what are the quests. That's where we're headed, so maybe they can get away with it, or they feel they can anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we just found out that Brandon Miller, you know, a lottery pick in this year's NBA draft, didn't know who Chris Middleton and Jonas Valanciunas were.
Yeah.
So yeah,
they're not old players. Like, they're current players.
They're like current active players, and Middleton was an all-star. Like, I don't know anymore, Andrew.
The NBA 2K community account says 6 for PC and 8 for PS5 as far as level of excitement out of 10. And it goes without saying, Derek, that the announcement, or the reveal, I should say, that the PC version of 2K24 is going to be current-gen, prior-gen, whatever, PS4, Xbox One port, did dampen enthusiasm in our community, and certainly throughout the modding community, which that account is part of. And of course, you do have a bit more promise on the next-gen consoles, the new-gen consoles. But yeah, PC, I think, definitely... a lot of people's enthusiasm was dampened after that that reveal.
Yeah, the person that runs that NBA 2K Twitter is actually Shuijoda of the NLSC community.
Yep.
And I have seen his commentary related to 2K24 in the preview season, et cetera, in the news that we've heard. And he is definitely not happy or excited about the PC version, especially related to the fact that he was really hoping for the PC version to be a next-gen port. So his ratings on the scale there are not a surprise.
So speaking of next-gen and pro play, which we touched on last week, we still don't know a lot about it. We're still speculating. But Day-Day says, was 9 when I heard of pro play, 3 now that they aren't talking about it as much as they would if it was truly groundbreaking. And BB-8 Tech Dad says, about a 5 maybe currently, but definitely my hype would go up if this pro play tech is what I'm hoping and envisioning it to be. But I doubt it in back of my head that it will be as they're making it out to be, also if things are corrected in My Era's mode. And also Ray says about My NBA Eras, I'm honestly indecisive and unsure about 2K24, was initially excited for Eras in 23, but the mode has too many historical inaccuracies, rushed rosters, and the generated draft plays look ridiculous. Don't know if 24 will fix this. PC is still current gen, which is a huge blow in my opinion. So again, we're seeing that uncertainty about what pro play is and whether it's going to be more gimmick than a huge step forward. And of course, the My NBA Eras, that was something that really drew me to 2K23. But again, like Ray said, when there were so many inaccuracies, when you had generated players that didn't look era accurate, that really just detracted from the mode, and I wasn't able to enjoy it as much, not able to get into it. Obviously, we can make our own rosters for that, and that's fantastic, and we should be able to do that. But when there's so much work to be done out of the box that either you have to do for yourself or wait for somebody else to do that, and it will take time to do that properly, then that's just time you're waiting, and you lose the enthusiasm for the game.
Andrew, you know I'm a classic hoophead.
Yeah.
You know I love, you know, the 90s. I love the 80s. Love the early, mid-2000s, etc. I'm a retro hoop fan, and I absolutely love the sport of basketball. However, I spent probably less than 5 hours total on My NBA Eras. You know how much I love basketball video games, too, right? Like, how is that possible? Well, the two reasons are the game's gameplay, which I did not find sharp for the reasons I mentioned. I did not find it good for competitive basketball or realistic basketball. And as other users have noted, the inaccuracies. The roster, in my opinion, you know, the overall of My NBA rosters were a mess. I think the signature shots were almost always off. They were just all over the place. Just a lot of copy and paste there, et cetera. And I kind of found it overall insulting to those eras and those players and teams and whatnot. So yeah, less than 5 hours for a hoop head like me, Andrew, on My NBA Eras. So yeah, it wasn't for me. Now, as far as the pro play feature goes, it's interesting. I compared it to Dynamic DNA in NBA Live 09 with a twist. That's the way it looks to me. You know, like Dynamic Seasons, etc. But yeah, like they're talking about bringing real animations from real life, so mocap, into the NBA 2K24 game. So let's say Anthony Edwards pulls off a move, or Brandon Ingram, or Zion Williamson finally gets back on the court and pulls off a move that, you know, is unique, that those animations can now supposedly be put into NBA 2K24, and now you can execute those animations with those players. Or maybe you can even attach them to your, you know, your career player or something like that. I think it's a really good idea in theory. So let's say Zion Williamson drives right hard, does a spin move, and then goes and spins the opposite way, and then does a dunk you've never seen before. It would be really cool to be able to get that animation that happened that night into the game, and for you to be able to attach it to a player or do it with him. So yeah, in theory, it sounds great, but we'll see how it's executed.
And looking at these responses, there's quite a few people who are not that excited and certainly cynical, and understandably so. Dibes, moderator in our community, of course, says, if you're talking about graphics, 0. If it's because of gameplay, 2. and just to see the new system. According to how every year they say it is revolutionary, almost like real life. If it is because of the park, zero. And I certainly understand that. But yeah, and of course, when you talk about the PC version, that excitement has dwindled. Roger Ward, one of the Live 01 legends, of course, says, one, we can't put down the classics. Currently having a blast with Live 2003. Per usual, we will listen to the analyst's critique of the gameplay and make our decision based on that. Khalil Ward says, one, just simply one, so not thrilled about what he's seeing so far. Zanu says, two, PS5, probably going to wait for it to be on sale. There's so much stuff they have to fix, but can't because they keep on focusing on the things that would make them more money. Can't really blame them, though. People enjoy being manipulated.
So Dybies, going back to his comment, I knew he wouldn't be excited at all for NBA 2K24 because he is obsessed and continues to be obsessed with NBA 2K14 for the PS4 and Xbox One, the way it looks, the way it plays. He's constantly posting on Twitter screenshots and clips of that game. He has continually stated that he thinks that the series has taken many, many steps back in relation to graphics and that they are not as good today as they are on NBA 2K14. And he has an argument. So I'm not surprised there. And in relation to what Roger said, we appreciate the support. You know, obviously Roger and Nate, the Live 2001 legends, they are friends of the show, really great supporters of our content, and we support them as well. But yeah, you're going to hear a lot of commentary from Andrew and I in relation to NBA 2K24 because obviously we'll be getting the different versions and we'll be getting our hands on the sticks. And more than likely, we're also going to be connecting and playing on it as yep. well. So you'll be able to see possibly some co-op or head-to-head gameplay.
Well, we've got cross-play on PS5 and Xbox Series X. Yeah.
Right, exactly. There's no reason why we can't this year. And then we could also connect and play the PC version. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But we appreciate the support.
And similarly, Just Ryan says, excitement level of 2 and Xbox Series X. Juicy Shackmeat says, unless we find out the new gameplay features on both next gen and last gen, I'm settling with a 5 out of 10 for now. I won't complain, though, if I'm gifted a copy like I did for Nintendo Switch version of 2K23 last Christmas. Steven, the Live King, Steve says, I was hoping for next gen on PC, but since it's not, I'm not really hyped for it. Still going to get it, but there's really nothing to be excited about. They're pushing crossplay too hard, like it's something new, lol. And of course, it is new to the series, but not in gaming in general. On the other hand, we have Peasy says, excitement is at 8. I'm very excited to play with my Houston Rockets, a new coach, vets, and super talented youth. Going to have fun in my NBA eras. I plan on getting it for Xbox Series X. Hopefully my career is good and can't wait to play crossplay with my PS5 buddies at the rec.
So with the Live King, I think that he should pick up the PC version still when it's on sale. And because you know they're going to have some big sale at some point where the game is like $10 or like $15 or something like that. They do it every year at some point during the release cycle. I think that's what he did this year with the PC version. He got it when it was on sale. And the reason is because I know how much fun he's had using those mods. I've seen him. He was in the top 10 this week with an awesome, realistic, updated TNT scoreboard, right? Which you can't do that on console. You do that on PC and whatnot. I think the flexibility with mods and being able to update the players and all of that stuff and also get a slightly different gameplay experience, I think makes the PC version worth it. If you love, you know, virtual basketball and if you love, you know, getting the newest game. And so, yeah, my opinion is I hope he jumps on that.
And at Storm Shimada says, considering it only for the Kobe cover, don't really know if I'll even play it. It's been difficult getting back into 2K. And along those lines, the random fan at Unknown Clown Man on Twitter, shout out to you for that username alone, says his excitement level is a 3, and 2 of those points simply go to getting the Kobe cover. And Bryn Gordon also says, 5, the key is them doing a Kobe challenge, which sounds like they are going to do. But yeah, I think the Kobe cover, it's interesting. We talk about the cover not necessarily being a factor, and certainly it isn't in, as far as the quality of the game, but it definitely draws people to at least get the game as collectors.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a smart move by 2K, right? To make him the cover athlete and make NBA 2K24 all about Kobe, because there are a lot of Kobe fans out there. There are a lot of fans of the history of the game, and they may just pick up the game just for that fact, the fact that he is represented on the cover. So I'd say, like, from these responses, the large majority of them, and there's been quite a few people that have commented as well that do not follow me, but I think that a good majority of them are negative Like, I don't think people are that excited. I'd say that the majority of people are saying their excitement is less than a 6 or less than a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10. And that does make me sad, right? Like, I wish people were overall more excited for the newest game. I wish there were more positive responses. And I do hope, and I said this to one of the people who commented on our YouTube video on our most recent episode, I hope, as well as you, that this game is amazing for everybody. Right? Like, we want everybody to love NBA 2K24. We want the gameplay experience to be better. We want it to be more balanced. We want the microtransactions to not, suffocate the consumer base, right? We don't want the people to feel pressured to spend that extra money on top of the game, the base game price and everything. And we want people to love basketball video games. So we have our critiques, but our critiques are valid. Right. And the end goal for both of us would be that, everybody has a great experience with basketball video games. That's what we want.
Exactly. We're not going into these wanting to be disappointed, but you can see from these responses that people are definitely skeptical after a few years of disappointment and a direction they don't like. Simi Wade says, "Gotta wait until trailer for the game and features, and then I can comment," which obviously it is very early in the previous season, but it shows that the hype isn't there just based on the brand anymore. Conversely, Renzo says 8 because of the Eras mode, and I think there's going to be focus on gameplay more this year. Devin Williams says, "I'll be honest, I'm at 3. I was highly disappointed in 2K last year. The shooting wasn't consistent to me. The foot planting and movement has been non-existent since 2K17. Felt like I was running in sand." Duffelbag Ran says 3. Rocket says 7.5. OG Billy Cook, who has definitely been cooking with Live 19 in the top 10 recently, says about a 0.5. So can't even put it on the 1 to 10 scale. Is that that's how skeptical he's feeling at the moment, is Archie. One Day Till Greatness says 1. I don't get excited because of a cover athlete. If it looks like 2K23, it will be a 0. Spence for the Nation says 100 PS5. So definitely looking forward to that. Does mention being a Lakers fan in his handle, so Kobe is probably adding to the hype already, understandably so. Bless Up Sav says 1. And Sweet Jones OTF Big Perk, of course, says he's going to be very annoyed if they don't allow superstars to stand out, but he's thinking there's going to be a Kobe Moments mode, and like Road to the 5 would be elite. And also heading over to our Discord for a couple of responses. SadCat43 says excitement level of 6, and Avery says 2. Haven't been excited for a 2K since 18.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I feel like, the way it is for a lot of people out there, because we've mentioned the roughness of NBA 2K18, and they kind of continued in that direction, especially related to the microtransactions and the same motion system and the meta builds and the, the number of artificial boosts. So I don't think Avery's alone there.
So, yeah, that's sort of a mixed bag, but there's both skepticism and optimism there.
Yeah, well, I thank you to the community for all the responses. We love gauging the pulse. We love listening to your thoughts on the newest releases and past games and whatnot. So yeah, we appreciate you.
And the interaction doesn't stop there because we do have a trivia question in the mailbag this week. So let us indeed open up the mailbag.
To the mailman, the pump fake. What an unbelievable dunk!
And Derek, you've been doing a fantastic job with the mailbag trivia in recent weeks and months, but I thought I'd steal your thunder this week and come up with one of my own.
I thought it was a great idea. I am not going to try to put them in order, in relation to the ratings that you're going to quiz me on, but I will try to guess the six players.
So the question this week is, can you name the six most clutch players circa 2008, at least according to the default rosters of NBA Live 08, 360, and PS3? And the clutch ratings for those players, those top six clutch players in Live 08, 360, PS3, were 91, 90, 89, 89, 88, and 85. So yeah, hit me with your guesses.
All right, so here we go. Gilbert Arenas, the cover player. I'll guess Chauncey Billups. Let's see here. Paul Pierce, Tracy McGrady, Dwayne Wade, and Kobe Bryant.
So that's 2 out of 6. And when I read out some of these ratings, you will be surprised because there are some very interesting choices there. So the top six are Kobe Bryant, 91, LeBron James, 90, Tim Duncan, 89, Dirk Nowitzki, 89, Gilbert Arenas, 88, and Carmelo Anthony, 85.
Huh.
And I think the one that stands out there, obviously, is LeBron James at 90, because certainly at that time, he stepped up in the 2007 Eastern Conference Finals, but still wasn't really known as a clutch player.
Yeah, I mean, I think that my top six, if you had turned on the game and saw that as a top six, you would be like, all right, that's fine. Right? Because, I mean, Dwayne Wade, if you remember correctly, he was super clutch at that point, and he was only a year or so removed from that 2006 NBA Finals, where he came up incredibly clutch.
Exactly.
And he's, you know, the main reason why the Heat, you know, won that series. So Wade not being in there, I think he should be. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think I did that bad, but, yeah, I got two of them.
Yeah, no, you got the 2 out of 6, and some of those ratings are certainly surprising, as clutch shooters as well, because it is actually specified as part of the outside shooting ratings. The outside offensive ratings is the clutch rating. So, you know, Tim Duncan was a clutch performer, I would say, but 89 as a clutch shooter. I mean, he did have some clutch shots, don't get me wrong, but is certainly surprising ahead of a Dwayne Wade, for example. The next six players, this is your 12-man all-clutch team in Live 08's default rosters, if you will, Derek. Is Richard Hamilton, 84, Tracy McGrady, 84, Allen Iverson, 82, Elton Brand, 82, Dwayne Wade, 82, and Mike Bibby, 81.
Rip Hamilton being in there and not Chauncey Billups. Yeah, I'm not. That doesn't fly with me.
Oh, we'll get to Billups.
That doesn't make any sense.
I've written down a few others as well. So there's, let's see, 7 players rated 80 in clutch rating in 08's default rosters. Vince Carter, Shaq, Ricky Davis, Ray Allen, Ben Gordon, Peja Stojkovic, and Steve Nash, all rated 80.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think that, where was Paul Pierce?
Oh, we're getting to him.
We haven't even got to Paul Pierce yet. That's the thing, is Paul Pierce was known for being clutch at that point. He was actually, I believe he's one of the better clutch players in the NBA, so I'm surprised we haven't even talked about him yet.
So next up, we have Jason Terry and Jermaine O'Neal at 79. Michael Redd, Kirk Heinrich are 78. Paul Pierce is 77, as is Sam Cassell. Tony Parker is a 76. Robert Horry, Big Shot Rob, or Big Shot Bob, if you will, 75, as is Yao Ming and Chris Bosh. Rashard Lewis, 74. Kevin Garnett, 73. Pau Gasol, 72. Chris Paul, Jason Kidd, and Chauncey Billups, 71. Andrew Bogut and Manu Ginobili at 70. Luke Ridnour is the most clutch player on the Supersonics that year at 68, which is the same as Kyle Korver on the 76ers and Deron Williams on the Jazz, 68 for all of them. Zaza Pachulia at 68 is the highest on the Hawks, ahead of Joe Johnson at 65. Derek Fisher.
That's just rush jobs. That's just absolute rush jobs. By the way, Derek Fisher should be, he's super clutch.
Yeah.
He's clutch for most of his career. He should be way up there.
Derek Fisher, 62. Kevin Durant, rookie Durant, is 61. That's third on the Supersonics behind Ridnour and Wally Szczerbiak at 62. Greg Oden is 61, tied for the highest on the Blazers with Martell Webster. Stephon Marbury is a 62. Adam Morrison is a 60. Brandon Roy, 51. Fifth on the Blazers behind Oden, Webster, Sergio Rodriguez at 55, and Rafe LaFrance at 54. And Kwame Brown is a 38.
Kwame Brown's the only one I agree with. I'm just kidding. No, some of them said, but the thing is I definitely would have had Pierce and Derek Fisher higher. I know that Pierce, we hadn't even hit the 07-08 season yet. In fact, NBA Live 08 is based off of the 06-07 season, but Pierce still had plenty of clutch moments and was considered a clutch player at that time. Derek Fisher, you know, the Lakers, it's questionable if they would have gotten out of a couple series without the performance of Derek Fisher during their championship runs and everything, because he hit so many big shots. But yeah, I definitely don't agree with a lot of those. It seems like some serious rush jobs by EA Sports there.
Definitely some weird ones. Andrew Bogut being higher than Derek Fisher is, they've filled in the spreadsheet very quickly, as you said. So let's get to the community's guesses now. Roger Ward says Kobe, Ray Allen, Dirk, Pierce, AI, and Billups, and has two in Kobe and Dirk there.
Hey, Roger, we got something in common. We both got 2 out of 6.
And the X, Andrew the X from the NLSC Thrill Ho, of course, in our community, says, if I was to take a stab in the dark, let's say Melo, Kobe, Arenas, Truth, Billups, and Ray Allen. So X got three there, Melo, Kobe, and Arenas.
There you go. He's number one right now. He's winning the trivia.
And heading over to our Discord now for some more responses. Juicy Shackmeat says, Kobe, Arenas, McGrady, Allen, Pierce, and Billups. So it gets two there.
Yeah, Billups, common answer here.
And should have been.
It makes sense at that point. Right, yeah, exactly. And the fact, like I said, the fact that Rip was higher than him, I just don't understand that.
And Sluggy Sports, of course, says Kobe, D-Wade, Melo, Arenas, LeBron, they were pushing him to the moon, LOL, and Dirk. So I believe that Sluggy gets that one with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Congratulations to Sluggy Sports, who's participated in multiple NLSC tournaments before and who's an awesome community member. In fact, him and I had an excellent session on NBA Live 2000 PC using the Vince Carter Raptors, a month or so back. So, yeah, congratulations to him.
With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week, either on the NLSC, NBA-Live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us and, of course, stay up to date with all of our content. So, Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at D43G and at D4384. I'm also on YouTube, D43, and on the NLSC, D43.
I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. So, thank you once again for tuning in, and until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.